By day, the history books tell us, Dr. Jekyll was a respectable family doctor and pillar of his community. Yet come the darkness of night, and good Dr. Jekyll became evil Mr. Hyde, whose hairy hands, ill-fitting suits, and large sideburns made him the scourge of Victorian London. But what is good? What is evil? Do such powers exist? Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World. And please welcome your surfers of the waves of the weird.
I'm Stuart Lee.
And I'm Jane Stevens, a she-demon from beyond the grave.
Yeah, that's right. If you were listening last week, you'll know that at the end of the show, Richard Herring, who I usually co-present the programme with, had his body possessed by a she-demon from beyond the grave called Jane Stevens.
Hello.
Yeah, and in the last week, while Richard's soul has been trapped in an interdimensional limbo, the she-demon and I have struck up something of a friendship.
Yes, I particularly enjoyed it when we went bowling in Streatham. You know, Stuart makes a great egg. I've never really gone for corporeal physical beings before, but it is nice to have something to grab hold of.
Right, so are we an item then?
Well, I've been meaning to say, the thing is, Stu, we're different. I'm a satanic, evil, inhuman she-demon inhabiting the body of a small Somerset man. And you're not. It's been fun,
Yeah, but... listen, I do the heartless fobbing off in my relationships, all right?
Not this time. I've never met anyone as insensitive, selfish and perverted as you, and I live in hell. I think it's best if I give Richard his body back. Goodbye.
Oh, I'm back.
Hello, Rich.
Where have I been all week? I'm exhausted, and my body feels really dirty and sore. What's been going on?
Nothing. Let's get started. Good. Without good, we'd have no positive moral yardstick to judge our actions by, and all rented videotapes would be returned unrewound.
Evil. It's the malignant energy that spreads its cancerous tentacles through the ranks of the weak and the selfish. And it's the first name of a 1970s motorcycle stunt driver who had his own range of palatoy action figures.
The film The Good, the Bad and the Ugly is an allegory of contemporary morality, in which good is personified as Clint Eastwood, bad as Lee Van Cleef, and ugly, the mysterious third universal moral force, as that fat Spanish bloke that no one can remember the name of.
In films, evil people always have enormous undersea bases, and they're usually foreign. Yet in real life, it's not so easy to identify evildoers, although a huge undersea base is usually a good clue.
Christians believe that out of good and evil, good is best, while Satanists, given the same choice, will plump for evil. Surely one of these two groups has to be in the wrong. But which?
The difference between good and evil can be as subtle as the difference between eating beetroot and eating small plastic bags full of blood. As these archive clips show. Number one, Swiss national hero William Tell shoots an apple from off of his son's head.
Oh, well very done. Good.
Good.
Number two, insane drug addict novelist William Burroughs shoots his wife out from underneath a glass.
Oh, sorry, everyone. It was an accident.
Evil.
Number three, magician Paul Daniels saws his wife, Debbie McGee, in half.
Does that hurt, Debbie?
Not a lot.
Good.
Number four, Texas chainsaw murderer Ed Gein saws his mother in half.
Edward!
Evil.
Number five, a Russian revolutionary throws a bomb at evil Tsar Alexander II.
Good.
Number six, a student throws an egg at British Prime Minister John Majors.
Evil. punishable by a £100 fine and dry cleaning expenses.
So now we've got some idea of what good and evil are. But which is best? To find out, we've arranged a sort of contest between the evilest person and the goodest person that we know.
That's right. And so, for the side of good, will you please welcome, from Praise Be, Thora Hurd.
Hello, and praise be to you all.
And representing evil, a big Lionel Nimrod welcome, please, for EastEnder Ian Beale.
Thanks for having me on the show. Hello, Thora.
Hello, Ian Beale, and praise be.
Ian Beale, Rich. He's not that evil, surely. Couldn't we have got Nick Cotton or Dirty Den? Or perhaps Jeffrey Dahmer, the Milwaukee Cannibal?
Yes, I know a lot of people would say that the EastEnders scriptwriters' attempts to change Ian Beale from an annoying 16-year-old boy into a cynical, hard-bitten businessman have failed completely. But for me, he's one of the great evil soap characters of all time.
Well, if you're sure.
Yes. Let the light and darkness war commence.
Right, I'll fly off in the helicopter to my giant undersea evil Ian Beale base and aim a nuclear missile at the world. An army of beautiful leather-clad kung fu guards will protect me from Thora.
And I will single-handedly try to stop Ian, armed only with a broadly good moral outlook and a religious pamphlet.
Right, see you later, Thora, you old bag.
Now, Thora, you've only got 30 minutes to get to the undersea base before evil Ian's missile destroys the world. And the quickest way out to sea is down this manhole and through the underground sewers. Thora, jump!
Ah!
Reseal the sewer, Rich. And we'll be in contact with Thora and Ian throughout the show to see if good or evil is best. Now, at some time in our lives, we've all done something evil. Stolen a fruit salad chew from our newsagent, thrown a stone through the window of a Christian bookshop, or furtively spied on the old woman downstairs from us as she removes the entrails from a fresh goose.
But how do we know which evil acts are the most evil? The 14th century Italian poet Dante, in his book Inferno, claimed to have visited hell itself and found out. Over to American Italian literature student Sally Mayo, who believes she's pinpointing the entrance to Dante's hell.
Hello. At the beginning of his book, Dante wakes in a wood by the entrance to hell, and I believe I found that very word here, just outside Uxbridge on the M25. Dante was guided through hell by the spirit of the poet Virgil, so first I've got to find him.
Tours of hell every half hour.
You must be Virgil. Take me to hell and back.
Ooh, all right.
Well, we'll be back with Sally later to find out more about hell and a little bit about some of the crazy people that live there.
But great broadcasting always retains a balance. Having sent an American to hell, it seems only fair to now send someone British to heaven. And it's Professor Philip Wheely. Phil, can you hear us?
Hello, yes. Now, while Sally is looking for the route to hell in classic literature like Dante's Inferno, I think I've found the route to heaven in the 1970s children's TV programme Rent-A-Ghost. In Rent-A-Ghost, Timothy Claypool and Bob Mumford would go up to heaven in a kind of lift. And here is that very lift in a disused BBC props warehouse in Acton. So, let's get in and see where it goes. Going up.
We'll see how Professor Wheely is getting on later.
Now, the early Christian communities had all sorts of ideas about what were good things to do. Not speaking, shaving the top bit of your hair off in a kind of circle, beating yourself with a whip, and being thrown into a pit of lions. Here's an account of the life of one such believer from Peter Scurlock's Early Saints in Victor 1974.
Saint Simon Stylites was one of the holiest and best saints of all, because unlike the other saints who healed the sick, cured the lame, or helped wounded animals, Simon chose to live at the top of a tall pole for 30 years, as his diary tells.
January 5th. Dear Diary. Sat on the pole all day again today. Gee, I really am most excellent, holy and good. I'm probably about the best person I know. Not that I meet too many people. January the 6th. Sat on the pole all day again. Betty and Ian brought me my food about noon, and I pulled it up on my special holy string. I was thinking how great sitting on a pole is. It is really great. January the 8th. Dear Diary, pole sitting again, tee-hee. Amazing news. Today, in the dust on top of my pole, I found a footprint. I wonder, could my pole be inhabited by someone else? He may just be behind me. January the 9th. Dear Diary, I climbed down from my pole today, went into the Cock and Beaver Tavern in town, drank a gallon of ale, smoked a funny cigarette, and had hot four-way action with the barmaids. Teehee, only kidding. I sat on the pole, really. I am so good.
But sitting on top of a pole for a long time is not everybody's idea of being good.
But there is one group of people whose lifestyle remains a powerful force for good, despite the ravages of time, the seductive murmurings of sinfulness, and the tempting sweetmeats of evil. The Cubs.
The Cubs are dedicated to the pursuit of good and the performing of good tasks. In fact, statistics show that nearly 74% of all good things done daily in mainland Britain are done by 7 to 10-year-old boys in shorts and green caps.
We've raked up all your leaves, Mrs. Harkin.
Thank you, Cub. Here's your 5p.
Mr. Nortvin, we finished constructing the specially adapted movement-impaired person's holiday cottage that you requested.
You have? Thank you, Cub. Here's 5p.
Well, Mrs. Palmback, it sounds to me like you and your husband's trouble is a lack of sexual variety.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, now, my advice is to try out a few new positions, experiment with glamourware, and let your imagination really run wild. I've got a leaflet you can have.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Cub. Here's your 5p.
Well, President Kalinta, you can't expect your nation's soil to be fertile if you continue to overfarm it.
Yes, I see.
Try farming less energy-intensive crops and use more organic nutrients.
Well, thank you, Cobb. I'll have the 5p flown to your land by private jet in the usual way, shall I?
The Cubs' commitment to good in all its forms is reaffirmed and sustained by their weekly meetings with their Arcalers.
Cubs, do your best.
Arcala, we will do our best.
Cubs, how good will this best of yours be?
Arcala, it will be quite good.
Cubs, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good will the best you refer to be?
Arcala, it will be 10.
Cubs, which is best, evil or good?
Arcala, good is best, obviously. Are you insane?
No, Cubs, I am not insane. I was just testing.
Oh.
But what of evil?
In medieval times, they believed that you could tell if someone was evil by chucking them in the river. If they sank, they were pure, good, and drowned. If evil, they floated. Which explains why between 1066 and 1952, 30,000 sponges were burned at the stake.
Perhaps Sally Mayo could shed some light on who is really evil on her tour through Dante's Hell.
Thanks, Richard. Well, Virgil and me are now in the inner circles of Hell.
In Hell's second circle, plunged up to the necks in a river of excrement, are the flatterers.
I like your toga, Virgil. You look very swanky.
Will they never learn?
Them, the ones having their lungs pulled out and slapped in their astonished faces.
Ow! My lung!
They're the non-smokers. Bit of a surprise for them, eh? Smug gits.
With that, back over to the studio, and I'll be back in touch if I find anyone at all in Hell who's actually done anything wrong.
Ooh!
Each generation has had its own heroes who are held up as the epitome of goodness. As a four-year-old, I made a list of all my then personal heroes. They were Martin Luther for standing up to the Catholic Church in Europe, Sir Thomas More for standing up to the Protestant Church in England, and Spider-Man for having the ability to climb walls and catch villains in enormous webs.
But the Oxford English Dictionary defines the word hero as a bloke with a big sword who knows how to use it. So, that makes King Arthur the best hero of all. He is the most potent symbol of good in English folklore.
slain by the hand of his own traitorous son, the noble Arthur lies dying in the arms of faithful Sir Bedivere.
Oh, Sir Bedivere, this is a mortal hurt. But fear not, I shall return. I shall return when England needs me most.
And as you join us, England are 3-0 down to the Cameroons and look set to go out of the 1990 World Cup. But Bobby Robson is making a last-minute substitution. Beardley's coming off for, is it Barnes? It's number 14, the dead mythological monarch, King Arthur.
Avast Cameroons!
And yes, he scores! The 1,500-year-old king's first touch of the game. And amazing, he scored again!
Hear me, Englishman! It is I, Arthur! And as I have returned to you, so you must return to the values of a nobler age. Be honest. Treat your fellow man with kindness. Value truth.
Well, King Arthur there. But for me, the talking point of the game has to be that goal in the 11th minute. Now, Jimmy, I'm sure that was offside.
But for every King Arthur fighting for good, there is an evil Ian Beale. Has Thora Hurd beaten the forces of evil yet?
Hello, everyone. It's me, Thora Hurd. I've just arrived at evil Ian Beale's evil undersea Ian Beale base, and already I find myself drinking cocktails in the private room of one of Ian Beale's well-built young male guards.
Well, Thora, you still refuse to reveal to me your secret plan for killing my evil master, evil Ian Beale. Perhaps this will change your mind.
Flattered that you find me, an elderly hymn-singing Christian humanist, quite so attractive, young man, but you best put your thong back on. I don't agree with relations outside marriage. I'm Thora Hurd, you know, not just any old tat off the streets.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, what's your name?
Tim.
Well, Timmy, you'll read this pamphlet. It's okay to say no, chastity in the 90s. While I go off and find evil Ian Beale. There's a dear.
Oh, hang on, I was meant to kill you.
Well, Thor's doing quite well there in Ian's undersea base. Let's go back to Professor Wheely.
Ah, thanks. I feel a bit funny going up this lift shaft all day. Wish I hadn't had that Danish pastry.
Going to heaven?
Yes.
Oh, me too. Let me in. Thanks. My name's Nina Fenkin. I've just died trying to rescue a motherless otter from the jaws of an alligator. But my history of charitable work with orphaned otters means I'm going straight to heaven.
Oh, that's nice. My name's Philip. Long way, isn't it?
Yes, it is a long way.
Miss Fenkin, have you made a smell?
Of course I haven't made a smell. I'm dead.
Oh, that might be what it is. Horrible. Can you smell it? Ugh.
You must have made it.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. Not in the lift to heaven. I hope we're there soon.
Professor Wheely approaching heaven there. Back down here, does Satan perhaps walk the earth in human form? Our next guest, Mr. David Warner of Solihull in the West Midlands, believes so and claims that the devil lives next door to him. Hello, David.
Hello. Yes, it is my belief that Lucifer, the Prince of Darkness and Lord of all evil, lives at 42A Aldbrook Road, Solihull, and from which address he is plotting the rise of his terrible demon armies and the destruction of Christ's kingdom.
Well, Alec and Trish Dalrymple are here in the studio tonight with their son to answer these accusations that their child is Satan.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Warner.
Get thee behind me, Satan.
Look, it's Mr. Warner who needs help, not our son.
Yes, there's nothing satanic about our Damien.
The boy is Satan. All the neighbours are plagued by his evil deeds.
He just stole an apple from Mr. Tedby's tree and he kicked a stone into Mrs. Felton's garden. He's a high-spirited lad.
And he flew through Mrs. Hammond's house in the form of a giant fire-breathing lizard with a pack of black dogs stealing infants from their cots and eating them. I call that more than high spirits.
Yeah, all right, Mr. Warner, but he did apologise afterwards.
I wonder if I could just bring your local parish priest, Father Raymond Van Halen, in on this.
We'd rather you didn't. Damien, be quiet.
Father Van Halen.
Yes, Damien is, by all accounts, a lovely little boy. Admittedly, as you can see, whenever he comes near a church or a member of the clergy, he does scream and shout and vomit green bile and accuse my mother of, I think it's sucking rocks in hell. I think, but, you know, many small children find church a bit overbearing. If I had to plunge seven knives into every child that one of my parishioners claimed was Beelzebub, well, I'd soon run out of cutlery.
Thanks very much, Father. Perhaps you'd better go now. If we could just ask Damien. Damien, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, I want to work hard at school so that I can become President of the United States.
And then use my power and influence to start a very big nuclear conflict that destroys civilization and releases bands of evil energy into Christ's kingdom.
Good, well, there's nothing unusual about that. In fact, I remember I had similar ambitions as a child.
Thank you, Stuart. Tread carefully. Let's see how Thora Hurd's getting on.
I can't talk now, Richard. I'm in a huge warehouse space full of scaffolding being shot at by evil PVC-clad kung fu assassins. I don't know what I'm going to do, but as the hymn says, good will as good shall do its duty to perform. Oh, they've shot my hat off.
Meanwhile, I wonder how Ian Beale feels.
Thanks, Stu. Thora's attempts to thwart me are useless. Nothing can stop my bomb. And then I, Ian Beale from EastEnders, will provide an exclusive catering service for all planet Earth. Ha ha ha! Evil is best.
Well, it's all very exciting, isn't it?
But before we have our final reports from Heaven, Hell and the Undersea Base, we need just one more piece of information.
That's right, Stuart. So over to Peter Fenn for Peter Fenn's weekly Hammond Organ Believe It or Not file.
Well, believe it or not, according to Richard Briers, leading a good life involves growing your own turnips, milking a goat and copping off with Felicity Kendall. And I tell you, there's at least one part of that good life I wouldn't mind sharing, and it's not the goat.
Thanks, Peter. And this week's Hammond organ music was?
Well, it's all the way back to 1975 with Viva l'España.
And who's that by?
Well, it's not always easy writing a Latin classic, and this one took the combined musicality of three signors, Signor Rosentratten, Gomez and Caerts. So, viva España and viva the Hammondo Organa!
Thank you, Peter!
Good, and hopefully by now student Sally Mayo has reached the heart of hell.
Here, Sally, we finally see the devil himself. Chewing in each of his three mouths the worst sinners of all time. Judas, the man who Judas'd Jesus. Brutus, the murderer of Julius Caesar, and Cassius, who invented those electronic keyboards Depeche Mode used to play.
Hi, guys.
But the most evil person of all time is housed elsewhere, not in Satan's mouth, but in a worse place. Here.
What, in Satan's pants? Gross.
Yes, come with me through this flap. Don't slip. Hang on to the elastic. And Luke, the most evil person who ever lived.
Simon Stylites!
Hee hee. Yes, apparently sitting on a pole all your life isn't good and holy. It's smug, selfish, wasteful and evil. Tee hee. It's a bit of a disappointment for me, turning out to be the evilest person ever, but ho-hum, I must pay.
So, pole sitting is the most evil thing you can do. What a shocker. I wonder if Professor Wheelie has reached heaven to tell us what the goodest thing is.
Heaven! Smashing!
I'd better go and take my place over there, on the Christmas tree. Good souls are arranged on the branches in ascending order of goodness. My work with orphaned otters entitles me to a perch about two-thirds of the way up, just above Martin Luther, but two branches below Spider-Man.
You see, and the best person ever is at the top.
Right.
I can't quite see who it is. If you just move the tinsel... Oh.
Ha ha! Surprise! Yes, it's me again, Simon Stylites. I'm also the best person ever, because apparently sitting at the top of a pole is so bad that it goes all the way round the back of everything, past infinity, and then becomes good. And sitting on top of this giant Christmas tree is even better than sitting on a pole. So I'm laughing. Good, isn't it? And evil, tee-hee.
Right, well, I'm a bit confused now. It seems that good and evil are the same thing.
Yes, they are, Stuart. That's right. But which is best?
Well, back over to Thora and Ian to find out.
Yes, hello. Thora Heard is my prisoner. Evil is best, and good is just rubbish. Guards, take Thora Heard to the Piranha Shark Pool.
Yes, Ian Beale.
Wait, Ian Beale, you evil caterer. Allow me a moment to speak.
Very well.
An old lady from Bradford wrote to me earlier in the year, Ian, on the subject of good and evil. She said, you know, Thora, it saddens me that some people think that evil is better than good. It isn't. Good is best. See, Ian?
A powerful argument, Thora. But it's no good. I'm still having you thrown to the sharks.
In that case, it's lucky my letter doubles up as an anti-tank rocket launcher. Ha ha! Ian Beale is dead and good has triumphed!
Thora, it's me, Tim the guard.
Oh, Timmy! Praise be!
But Thora, I thought you said this kind of behavior was against the rules of good.
Oh, Tim, rules are meant to be broken.
So, despite good and evil being the same, good is best, apparently.
Yes, so if you're planning to be evil,
think again. Goodbye from us, and see you next time.
So now we know the nature of good and evil. Perhaps then, within each good Dr. Jekyll, there is an evil Mr. Hyde waiting to emerge. But there is a ray of hope. For within each Mr. Hyde, there might also be a timid Dr. Jekyll whom we could tempt out with the promise of a biscuit or a hot drink. And what finer message to end on. But do not be afraid, friend. I, Lionel Nimrod, shall return with more terrifying journeys into my inexplicable world.
Inexplicable World featured Stuart Lee, Richard Herring, Rebecca Front and Armando Iannucci with Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Richard Herring and Stuart Lee and produced by the good and evil Sarah Smith.
Attention, at this moment you are now listening to
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World.
Brought to you by www.fistoffun.